fires have been devastating parts of Southeast Asia because of the production of palm oil. This oil is present in so much of the food that we consume. 70% of its supply shows up in processed foods like
cookies, crackers, Nutella, ice creams, candy bars.
That's Jocelyn Zuckerman, a freelance writer and the author of the forthcoming book, Planet Palm. And Jocelyn says that palm oil is also produced for things that we all use, cosmetics, body care products, and increasingly to make biodiesel fuel. Jocelyn also told me that more than half of the global supply of palm oil comes from Indonesia, where forest fires are being set to clear land for plantations, and the repercussions for the environment are huge.
Indonesia's peatlands now emit more than 500 megatons of carbon dioxide each year, which is more than the entire annual emissions of the state of California.
The increase in fires for palm oil production isn't just harming the climate, it's also displacing indigenous communities and affecting human health. And while the center of palm oil production is in Indonesia, the United States has been a major contributor to the growth of this industry.
Two things happened in the mid-2000s. First was the health community discovered that trans fats were a big problem, and they resulted from hydrogenating liquid oils. So palm oil is semi-solid at room temperature. So when they wanted to take out those hydrogenated oils, at first they said companies had to label if they had trans fats in their products, and then there was a ban all out. So a lot of those other oils that were being hydrogenated were replaced by palm oil. And then the other thing that happened was in 2007, George Bush announced a renewable energy policy that involved replacing a lot of our gas with biodiesels. And so it's not that we're using palm oil for our biodiesel, but a lot of the soy oil that we used to use in food products is now being used for biodiesels. So that vacuum is being met by palm oil.
What impact has that had on the environment, the use of palm oil as a biodiesel fuel?
Massive. So the thing about palm oil is that it grows best 10 degrees to the north and south of the equator, which overlaps with the planet's tropical rainforests, which are, in addition to being huge, rich centers of biodiversity, all these old growth trees are holding up tons of carbon. And then on top of that, much of it is over peatlands, which is soils that have accumulated over tens of thousands of years. When you burn that, it's like a carbon bomb going off into the environment. And a lot of the planting that happens in Sumatra and in Borneo is happening on peatlands. Those fires can smolder for years.
You mentioned fires. Who is behind these fires in Indonesia and why are they being set?
Every year around this time, there is a slash and burn that takes place, but this year is an El Nino year, so it's particularly dry. So these are smallholders and bigger plantation companies that are burning the vegetation in preparation for planting.
Does the palm oil industry combined with these fires, does that contribute to carbon emissions?
Absolutely. Any of the carbon that's in those trees that they're burning down, if they're doing this on peatlands, then there are massive amounts of carbon that's coming out of that. And we know we've got a tiny carbon budget, right? We can't increase it more than 1.5 degrees Celsius. So all of this carbon that's going into the atmosphere from these forests and from these peatlands is just taking away from other carbon that we can be contributing.
You've seen these palm oil plantations in person. What are the conditions there?
They're pretty depressing. I mean, you can fly over Sumatra, you fly into Kuala Lumpur. There's just, you know, palm oil plantations as far as the eye can see. And places I visited, there are communities that are still living within these plantations. There are indigenous Orang Rimba communities. They're living in sort of under tarps and lean-tos, and they're just in a forest of palm oil trees. It's very hot, and they don't have any food. They used to source everything from the forest, and there's no forest left. Often people complain, and I've been on plantations not just in Indonesia and Malaysia, but also in Liberia and Honduras and Guatemala, and you hear the same thing over and over. People complain of their water being polluted by fertilizers and pesticides, and just they lack access to land where they used to grow food.
PepsiCo, Mars, Nestle, Unilever have all said that they would buy sustainable palm oil to avoid some of the issues that we've just discussed. Mm-hmm. But what does that look like, and how realistic is it that they will actually be successful?
It's very hard. So they're all members of something called the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil, which was established in 2004 in response to criticism about environmental practices and human rights issues and labor issues as well. I was in Sumatra about a year ago reporting with an organization called Eyes on the Forest, And what they do is they track palm oil fruits from where they're grown to the mills, because these companies and the RSPO, they say we can trace things to the refinery or to the mill. And the assumption is, because the fruit is perishable, if it's being processed in this particular mill, the assumption is that it's from a certain perimeter. But I was with these guys who had seen in the past, and when I was with them, they saw these drivers would pick up fruit off from illegal plantations, often inside national parks, inside places that are not supposed to be growing palm oil, and race through the night, sometimes changing license plates, changing drivers to evade anybody realizing where this palm oil is actually coming from. And then it goes into the refinery and into the, there's about 20 big traders, and that all gets sort of mushed together. So it's very hard to know, you know, it's just impossible really to know that a supply is 100% deforestation free.
Given all that information, given the fact that so much of our foods contain palm oil, and as we said earlier, it's now considered a biodiesel fuel, is there anything that consumers, American consumers in particular, can do if they want to avoid palm oil?
Well, it's hard to avoid because it's in, the estimate is 50% of products on the grocery store shelves. Also, it goes by all sorts of names, palm kernel oil, palmate, palmitate, palm oleine, glycerol, stearate, stearic acid. It goes on and on. So you can read a label and think, oh, good, there's no palm oil in here, but actually there may in fact be. I would say, I mean, in terms of food, if you don't eat a lot of processed foods, that's not going to be a problem. It's very hard to avoid in things like toothpaste and body lotions, and that's less of a concern to me. My bigger issue is this 70% that ends up in food products, because it's also contributing, at the same time that it's contributing to climate change, it's contributing to obesity and malnutrition. So taken all together, it's a pretty big problem. The Lancet came out with a report earlier this year on something they're calling the global syndemic, which is the simultaneous crises of obesity, undernutrition, and climate change. And if you look at those, palm oil is sort of right there in the center of all of that. There are also a number of organizations that track closely what companies are using deforestation-free palm oil, or to the extent that they can. So if you wanted to get involved, you could look on the websites of the Rainforest Action Network or WWF, which also publishes a scorecard evaluating companies for the use of sustainable palm oil.
Jocelyn Zuckerman is a freelance writer and the author of the forthcoming book, Planet Palm. Jocelyn, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.